from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
G'day there and welcome to the rewrap. All the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast on Thursday in a sillier package. I am Glenn ZB and this morning have we got some questions being asked over the vote count, especially with all this early voting going on. Arch America's Cup villain Jimmy Spittle comes into the studio. A pipeline update for you and we take you to Mars, sort of. But before any of that, another poll and another step backwards for Labour.
Back to national. And if 46% of the Greens aren't there, the Nats will win on the night. It will be like none of this madness of the last 6 weeks has ever happened. If the Greens do get up, and last night's poll had them on 8, which you would think gives them enough breathing space, even if they don't poll on the night as well as they are currently, they should scrape in. But say 37 Labour, say 6 for the Greens, that's 43 Labour is short of government, right? Add Peters on 5, they're still short of government. It looks messy, it looks convoluted. If you believe these numbers, and you believe there has been a collapse in Labour support and the surge back to the government, this is why. The tax and the farmers. Jacinda Ardern, if these numbers pan out, might well have cost her party government. Once people focused on the taxes, once they woke up to the fact that Labour were trying to tell us there will be tax, but they don't know how many or how much, it's all up to some Machiavellian tax group we know nothing of. Suddenly the fairy dust settled and reality struck and a certain sort of normality returned. Which is not to say this is over, because it isn't. Everyone who's been around agrees on one thing. This has been the most extraordinary campaign, and given all that's happened, to assume it'll just finish up in some sort of sedate and predictable way is naive to beat the band. But if you want good numbers from a poll, this is the time to have them, and Labour must be now sweating bricks.
I really hope the Nats do have a resounding victory on Saturday night, preferably nice and early. Because I'm working Saturday night. That's really the only reason. And it also means that we won't have to talk about the election as much in the following weeks if there's no messy coalition deals to sort out. That's really all I care about. That's what's in it for me. Assuming that they count the votes correctly, of course.
Funny old aspect to the election came out yesterday. Jacinda Ardern's a bit worried about some of the people who are counting the votes. They apparently are taking the boxes home. You know, the cardboard boxes that you put your slip in. So they apparently come 5 o'clock, ding, ding, home time, pick up the box and take it home with them. And her inference appears to be that, I don't know, maybe they play break the box open at night or something like that, and they sort of throw votes around the room or stick a couple in the pot. But for a person, and I sort of I contradict myself, because I love a Saturday and I love going to a school hall or a church hall and voting and putting the paper in the box. I love all of that. But when you think about it, it's a fantastically rudimentary system, isn't it? I mean, the concept that Beryl picks up the box and takes it home.
And then probably having a few wines after a hard day vote counting.
God's sake.
You know what it's like. You know, you've had a couple of drinks and you think, that pile there, have I counted that pile or is that in the to-be-counted pile? Oh, bugger, I'm going to have to start again. Now, Jimmy Spittle, he's got a book out. Do we like him or not like him? It's a bit hard to say, isn't it?
One of the funniest things in this book of yours is you were told you would never be good at sports. And I've now lost count of the number of people who've gone on to greatness who at some point were told by somebody they would never amount to much. Do you think that's a prerequisite to actually go on and do well?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, I think a little bit of character building or having a few knockbacks isn't a bad thing. You know, going through life and as a kid, you know, to a certain extent. But yeah, it's an interesting one, you know, because that someone telling you can't do it, especially when you're younger, seems to motivate you.
Yeah, exactly. You seem to get, you come from the interesting thing about yachting as well is there's a lot of money in yachting, tremendous money in yachting, and you come from regular, you know, ordinary background. Is there a point where you cross over, and I'm assuming you're a self-made man now and all of that sort of stuff like the rest of them, is there a point where you cross over and you run the risk of changing?
I don't think so. I've always kept the same group of mates and friends back home and tried to remain pretty grounded. The same with my kids. I mean, the tough thing I find now being a parent is that, you know, I came from pretty modest means, and I really think my kids have got it way better than they know. They're almost living in a bubble, you know, like We're living in Bermuda, you're in, you know, pretty decent house and schools and stuff like that. So it's kind of a tough one. What do, you know, as a parent? But, I think, like anything, it's a constantly changing world, and as long as you just keep true to your values and, you know, don't take yourself too seriously and have a bit of a laugh and keep it fun, then, you know, hopefully you'll do a half-decent job.
Exactly. People treat you well here in general. I've always admired you personally because I like winners and people who are dedicated to what they do. But there was always that, you know, Spittle's a prick and he's too much, you know, the whole thing. Do people treat you well?
Really well, actually. I think they like me a lot more as a loser. but I'd much prefer to be disliked than a winner. But no, I've got to say, like, whether we had a successful campaign or, you know, coming off Bermuda, had an amazing amount of support from, you know, from Kiwis, because I think they respect, you know, anyone out there that's out there having a go and up against it. Of course, there's, you know, a couple of the odd percentage that, you know, goes a little bit crazy, but I think you get that anywhere. But for the most part, and I think for Australians and Kiwis, there's always been that healthy banter, and I think they respect and enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a fine line between healthy banter and, you know, out-and-out abuse. I've always struggled with that when dealing with Australians. It's mostly just because they're so thick that quite often they miss my jokes. Tried to throw in a few here around the pipeline. Let's see how many Mike got.
I've got an interesting update on the pipe. So the digger operator who damaged the pipe would have almost certainly have known what he's done. This is coming from New Zealand Refining. New Zealand Refining saying there is clear evidence it had been struck with a digger. There are teeth marks visible at the location, about 20 centimetre tear in the pipe. So, in other words, there was it. Because remember, there was some sort of bloke who came out early on and go, well, I've been in the paddock and I couldn't see any marks anywhere and therefore I'm not sure it was a digger. It gets weirder. There is clear and independently been confirmed that the digger had dented and scraped over the pipe with quite significant force. So in other words, the inference is the digger bloke knows he's done something here. Refining NZ, now listen to this. Refining NZ said and admitted it, they might have, in the heat of the moment, have contributed to speculation that the fuel pipe was corroded at the point of rupture. But they did not have any evidence of that. And there may not have been a corrosion issue at all. Why would they say that then? Why in the heat of the moment would you suddenly go, oh, it could be corrosion? In fact, when they looked at the pipe itself, it's in almost pristine condition. There's no corrosion at all. What a weird thing to say.
What is it? Because the inference has always sort of been that, oh, we scrape the pipe a bit, so strip the primer off it, and underneath it's made out of what?
Exactly. I don't know.
Iron?
None of this makes any sense.
I'm assuming that the pipe is, surely it's the same all the way through, isn't it? It'd be something that's pretty rust-proof, I would have thought.
There was also, and here this
I mean,
does,
you and I, we are not petrochemical experts.
No,
admittedly.
But you've got that certificate in agricultural petrochemical cleanups or whatever it is.
Words to that effect.
So you are,
that
you
is
are
correct.
You are broadly speaking,
I mean, I know how to mix a tank of you know, anti-russet spray, don't get me wrong.
Well, exactly. So you're virtually an expert for the purposes of this conversation. There was very clear signage warning of the pipeline on the farm fence about 8 to 10 meters away from the location where it ruptured, which does answer my question. I thought, why aren't these things locked down, monitored, protected? You can't get within 100 meters of them. It's all very well running it through farmland and stuff, but surely you map the whole thing, and no one should be allowed within a mile of the thing for this very problem.
Is this another Rainbow Warrior situation? Is that what you're alleging?
If a couple of people suddenly leave the country, I'm going to be and end up in an atoll, I'm going to be deeply suspicious.
Yeah, it's one of the cool things about living in New Zealand is that nobody really seems to care that, there's probably like half a dozen things like the Avgas pipeline that you could completely take out, you know, with something as rudimentary as a digger and bring the country to its knees, but nobody can really be bothered, you know? Hey, have you ever wanted to go to Mars? Well, Laura Lark almost did. She went into a tent on a volcano in Hawaii for about the same amount of time as she would if she'd gone to Mars.
Was there a psychological out for you to the extent that, as real as they tried to make it, deep down you know that if something went horrifically wrong, you're actually safe and they would pull the pin?
I think there is. It's a one thing that it's difficult to get in an analog like this, unfortunately.
And there's nothing really you can do about that, because there will still be ultimately a leap of faith when the real thing comes along, if it comes along.
Well, sort of. There are there are many analogs, and each of them has different strengths. So in high seas, the strength is that it's really isolated, that they can choose the people who go and set up a lot of the psychological conditions around isolation and confinement. So when people talk about space missions, they talk about isolated, confined, and extreme environments. So high seas, it's isolated and confined, but it's not extreme. There are other analogs, for example, the Antarctic bases that are extreme, and we can learn a lot from those as well and combine the knowledge from all these different kind of similar to Mars situations and maybe learn how to go for real.
I would be quite happily pretend to be on Mars for an extended period, but only if I could do it alone. Only if I could do it alone and I had access to online television. Make those two things happen and I'm there. I don't want to be cooped up with somebody else, especially if we can't discuss the latest episode of The Deuce, for example. I am Glenn ZB. That was the rewrap for Thursday. See you on Election Eve tomorrow. Oh, it's so exciting.